I know. I mean, talk about epic. Everybody, you're listening to Big Blend Radio with Nancy and Lisa, publishers of Big Blend Magazine, travelers of the Love Your Park Tour, and... Wow, did we go to the beach? Something just happened. We went floating in the space.
We beamed up.
We beamed up. I swear to God, we did. We went somewhere, my gosh. But hey, we're here, wherever we are. But very excited. You just heard Top of the World by Robert Berry. And Robert, do you have us on speaker?
I am on headset.
Okay. Not
I don't know where that sound came from. That was a
something
long
happened. We're recording. We are in.
Telling you,
your introduction. Here's this epic song, and then we beamed up at the end. What just happened?
It's a space song, and there's space people watching.
Is that what's going on? There's space people. Well, there's space stuff going on in this album. Everyone, Robert Berry is here. Robert is amazing. He's a Grammy-nominated recording artist. You know, he plays all kinds of instruments, awesome vocalist, as you just heard, songwriter, a producer. And this song, Top of the World, is the first track from the album, Freshen. It is out now under the name 3.2. So this is the third installment of the series, right, Robert? And welcome, by the
it
way.
It is. Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here, talk to both you, the traveling women of the rock and
yeah.
everything else. And everything,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, we do a little bit of everything.
I had a band in 1988 with Keith Emerson and Carl Palmer called Three. We only did one album. Keith was criticized heavily by people, and he didn't want to do another one. And 27 years later, he heard a live version of us playing, and he called me and said, "We were such a great band. What was I thinking?" I took the opportunity to do ask him if I wanted to do another one. He said, "Let's do it." That was why we put the 3.2, the second version of 3, on the album name or on the band name. And that album was called The Rules Have Changed because, you know, he committed suicide right in the middle of us working on that album. You know, very sad time for me, but a couple years later I finished it. It did so well, the record company asked me to do a third one. And that's what we're talking about right now, Third Impression. It is the last one in the series. And there can be no more because I don't have a Keith Emerson to work with anymore, and I just can't do it by myself. I choose not to do it by myself. Let's say.
Sure. Right.
But
this album, I feel like a lot of the music should be like. I know that you wrote a rock opera. Nancy's all into that. Like
she wants
into
that.
And then you listen to Top of the World, and then you go through the end to Never, and. To me, this takes you on this epic journey of all kinds of emotions. Like, it's tumultuous, yet it flows together as an album. But you know what I mean? You take us, and I feel like you're taking us around the world as well with the album.
I it was a little bit of a risk for me. You know, I only had one song left that Keith and I had written together, which is the last song called Never. It's almost 9 minutes long. And then when they wanted me to do an album, another one, I said, I don't want to do it. I only have this one song, and it's mine. It's on my hard drive here at the studio. You know, no one else has ever heard it. I said, you really should do what you do. Okay. I said, if I can write 7 songs that I think Keith would like to work on that I'm proud of, and he would have done a great job and been happy, I said, I'll do it. But, begrudgingly, I set out to write. And as we started the process, I had to think, this will be the last album I ever do that has anything that Keith and I worked on together. So half this album needs to be a transition away from that into what I might do next, which Top of the World, the song you play, kind of has a little bit of all that in it. And if you've listened to everything, you hear there's a jazz piece in there, emotional trigger. There's, more of a ballad thing that I actually wrote for my mom when I lost her a couple of years ago. It runs the gamut, and I just wanted to put what my life was in the last 2 years. That time stamp is what this album is, and people have said it does hold up together, although I could see people thinking, well, it doesn't quite fit together, some of the songs, but basically
I think
it does.
I think it does, because it takes It does, like, and I think the first thing I heard of it was watching the video, the music video of Fond Farewell.
Yeah.
And so that was my entrance into it. And I should have started at the album, but, you know, watching that and that whole space thing of going in the future and looking in the back, you know, it was like that, it was like a interesting, you know, just, it was interesting to look to the future and look backwards at the same time. And
that's really great because that's why we do the video. So it obviously worked with you to get you into it, which is really good.
And it's, I'm a blonde. I keep calling it. It's spacey.
How funny.
I just feel like there was a big battle in space. And the good side was losing. And then some space entity comes in and goes, no, you can't lose. And gives them that kick that they needed. And then they won. The good guys won. That's how, in my mind, I see a whole space movie. Yeah.
You're thinking that the guy and the girl got together and repollinated the Earth. See, that's what you're thinking.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
I never thought about it from that. That's what the shooting stars are all about, right? Pollination.
Yes.
Pollination.
The pollination.
There you go.
Listen, but the album does stick together and flow, but it does, you know, when you think about barreling out of space, you're going through your, you know, it's like if you think about exploration, and you think about, you know, there's exploration, and there's parts of time when you explore. Like, for us, we drive, as you know, we drive across the country. Thank you, Sammy Hagar, for good radio music and good music for the years.
Really.
I mean, as a musician. And listen, Tequila, we have to give him to that, too. But there's like, you know.
You finally caught Nancy's attention. See that?
I got her. When you travel, you're moving forward, but there's a part in travel where you're reflecting back. And to me, that's what's so captured in the album. That's just for me. Everybody has their own thing when they listen to music, look at art, read a book.
Yes.
But for me, I feel like you're straddling those lines, and that's a whole other carpet ride, you know, forwards and backwards.
That's a great observation. I haven't thought of it that way, but I did think of it as honoring my past with the original three album in 1988 and keeping that piece of it and then moving on the future. So, I mean, I could see, yes, that's a good observation.
Yes, that's it. But you do have some Celtic stuff going on, like Black of the Night. There's Celtic, even in Top of the World. You've got a Celtic stuff going through here.
Oh, the beginning is totally Celtic.
Yeah.
You know, I not only produce a band called Tempest.
Oh, my God.
Celtic rock
know Tempest. We know Tempest.
Oh, well,
Scottish Island James in Vista, California. And they didn't hire him back because they were too rock and roll and badass. And they were in the band of the Wicked Tinkers. Those two bands are badass.
Oh, Wicked Tinkers. They've been in the studio, too. Yeah, they've been.
No. Dude.
I've done 13 albums for Tempest.
Well, see.
I produced all of them. Yeah.
And they went to the the Celtic Games or the Highland Games in Sonora, California, where they joust and stuff, you know. Tempest, I thought, was so cool because
they were awesome.
Them and the Wicked Tinkers, the two of them have so much passion, and they really bring out the fact that Celtic music comes from, you know, the Middle East. A lot of the sounds and everything, so it's really world music. Celtic music is world music in an interesting way. But
I've become such good friends with Leif, and I enjoy working with so much. I also did a soundtrack to a book series called The Wheel of Time by Robert Jordan, who wanted a Celtic kind of soundtrack. And I don't know if I've become an expert in Celtic music, but I really like it. And Keith Emerson liked it, too. So that's why I got some of this on the album, because, again, it's something that I love. I actually had Tempest in the studio twice last year to do a live broadcast and everything is shut down to help them pay their bills. You know, they perform. They do albums perform. That's how they make their money. So I went in the studio. We shot a live video and like Facebook Live, and they got donations. They did really well with it. They sounded great. They had a couple of new players. And
fantastic.
It's all part of my happy world here, the sound tech.
This is so cool.
I think
Tempest was actually on our first radio show we did with the Scottish Games. Wicked Tinkers has been on a lot, Highland Way, a lot of, you know, and it's like, I love their energy and that they brought rock into it, you know, and I think that's in a huge, because you can. But I want to talk to you about your recording. So you'll go on somebody else's label, and you know you've done all kind, you know, all kinds of labels. But you, as a producer, you started this at a very young age. You were like going through your history. It's been like when are you writing a memoir? That's actually, let's just start there. Then let's talk about producing, because you should.
You know, I started writing. I have two kids, and I started writing something for them, which I call my book, but it probably will never be a book. But what it turned out to be was all the positive influences in my life. None of this has happened just because I'm going to make it happen. It's all happened because people have believed in me, or I've proven that I'm capable of them, and they've used me, like Keith Emerson, right? I mean, my God, he's the most famous, best human player in the world. How'd that happen? You obviously saw something in me, and then I proved that I could keep up with him. And all the way back when I was 12 years old and got in my first band, that's always been the case. I've worked really hard to please or stay with my influences, the people that have helped me and everything else, and do a good job. And also this book that I call a book came together. I thought, I want to leave this to my kids, or maybe grandkids if I ever have them, that shows the inspiration that other people can bring to your life. As long as you keep working hard, it'll just rest on your laurels, kind of, you know.
There's your rock hopper right there. There's your rock hopper.
Good things, though. I need some tragedy. I turn all the negatives into positives. So even if I have negatives in my life, they don't come across as negative. Mm. I turn them into a learning experience, on positive. So I need tragedy. Let's not start it now.
I think the country in the world has its own tragedy
that we don't need.
We actually, you know, if you think about it, it's like the world is a tragedy, and we're like taking the good nuggets and enjoying. You got music like yours, and I think tragedy is there. Tragedy is, you know, but life and death. Death is just the next cycle. It's tragedy for the people, you know, here, but it's the next stage, I think. It's interesting when people move on. It's sad, but
You're getting me onto one of my subjects, so I don't want to talk about too much. But I'm in Silicon Valley here, Campbell, California, San Jose. We are the seventh largest economy in the world in Silicon Valley, and we have more homeless people. It makes me sick. Our governor, our state of California, if they can't take care of this problem, nobody can. We're the seventh largest economy. Come on, we're only a state. That means we're bigger than, I don't know, Lithuania. We're bigger than other countries, our economy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this terrible problem. Really? That just makes me sick. I mean, that's a tragedy, but I don't want it in my book because my book's more positive.
but this is a true thing.
But it's true.
The homeless situation is actually what sent us on our tour across the country. You know, 2008, that whole crash that happened was really bad.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of shows about, our national park system, when you pay your dues in, or if you buy a pass online or something, goes into the national parks fund, which goes into part of the general fund. Well, people, dirty hands, take money out of the fund and put it in other things. Parks and tourism. Parks are mental health. They are, whether it's a community park or a national park, we've learned. We've been doing this for almost 10 years on the road, and learned all parks matter, every single one, every community park, urban park, and homeless people do invade those parks because they need a place to go. And part of the problem we have homelessness is not accepting and working with responsible tourism, which is parks. And we were putting all these pieces together, driving from Tucson to the Everglades and seeing places boarded up, much homelessness where we were. Homeless people living in their cars in hotel parking lots, sleeping in their car there, and then going in to pretend to get breakfast. We saw all kinds of things, and we went, you know, this is not right. And we did interviews about homelessness, and at that point was 2012. Pat LaMarche was on our show. She's an expert on this. She said the average age of a homeless person at that point was 9 years old. So this is your trickle-down economics. If we don't help, I mean, right now we're going to go through the next wave. It's going to happen if we don't all work together. L.A.'s in big trouble with it. So I, you brought up the word homeless, and Nancy and I will go off for years about it.
No,
and we'll try
okay. Can I just say this, that the biggest landlord in this country is federal government. Guess who has the most vacant buildings? The federal government. Guess who's paying for those vacant buildings? The taxpayer. So I say make them shelters. Make them shelters.
Well, I think we only have one problem with that, and that's that, I don't know what the percentage is. Let's say 30% are mentally ill, 50% are mentally ill. Like in California, Reagan got rid of the mental institutions. That was, I know there's a lot of crime and stuff in them, but we need mental institutions and housing.
Yes.
And here's the thing. You know, I have this band called December People. We play every November and December.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
love what you do with that.
We play holiday songs on the styles of famous rock. Like we do Stairway to Heaven is Night Before Christmas. Top is whatever, you know. Anyway, we take the big songs and we mash the Christmas carols into them. We believe we play the small venues, 5,000, 2,500 seaters. We think that every city, not state, every city could take care of their own homeless people because it doesn't cost that much. When you start to work for the food banks and stuff like we do, $20 buys a ton of food. These homeless banks, these food banks know how to do it. The homeless shelters know how to do it. Let them do it on a bigger scale. But if each city kind of took care of their own, I think it'd be done. It wouldn't be that expensive. The federal government can't get anything right. Obviously, our governors can't get anything right when it comes to this, right? So we got to go smaller. We have to have Campbell take care of theirs. Napa take care of theirs. L.A. take care of theirs. I honestly think it could be done if just somebody in each one of those cities cared enough. I know we care enough here in Silicon Valley. We raise more money and have more food, but it's not a centralized effort that says, okay, here's where we're going to house people, here's where we're going to feed people. It's sort of like, you know, the Kaiser insurance. Kaiser, when you get Kaiser insurance, you get everything. You get not only your doctor's visits, but the pharmacy's there, the eyeglasses are there, you know, everything. It's all there at Kaiser. That's what we need in each city. Something that's all-encompassing, so they don't have to worry about what the other guy's doing. It's just a couple people's job to make this happen. Anyway, I'm going
to
get off the soapbox.
Your December, what you're doing with that, because it's holiday music, but you're doing concerts, but isn't that how you are raising funds for, like, community food banks? And through the concerts, just to tie that back to the homeless and clothing and so people can donate or the I think it's so cool.
It was great. We did one and we had along with it, bring food but bring socks. And of course the money, half the money, or 90% of the money was donated too. But homeless people, socks, their socks get wet, they get sick, they die. Socks are like the most needed thing. A lot of people donate coats and stuff. Oh, I've learned a lot about this.
This is amazing.
Excited about it.
Yeah. No, I love what you're doing, because what I think also is, and I know so many musicians, everybody has a cause, and I think it's something that our businesses are changing over to doing, to having more of a philanthropic arm of, like, did I say that? Did I even pronounce that right? It's wine time here.
Philanthropic.
I don't know. Philanthropic. but you have to have that arm, but really be honest and have integrity with it, not just be a tax write-off. It's about actually connecting. And I feel companies that are starting to engage and do more of that, whether it's a company, a musician, a band, a writer, there should be something you tie together to be part of the community.
It is
like
what do you stand for? What do you stand for? You know,
besides what you do, what do you stand for? It's kind of that.
Yeah, but I think we should all stand, no matter what your political beliefs are, we should all believe that we help the weakest of our society. Bottom line, doesn't matter, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, whatever, the weakest of our society. And, you know, you don't always give handouts. Sometimes you make people work for what they're, okay, you know, you've got to
do
this,
that's
whatever.
Right.
Okay, make that part of the program, because that gives people pride in themselves too, which of course they want. But then there's a mentally ill, so they got to go somewhere. You know, we got to take care of them. But easy to talk about, but each little city doesn't have that centralized person or group. There's a lot, like we must have 10 different groups here dealing with the homeless and hunger and all kinds of stuff, which is great. But I think we could take care of it, in San Jose at least, in Silicon Valley with all the money that's here, we could take care of it easy.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? Of course. And, you know, but I like what you're saying. I mean, we can do this and stand for the, you know, raise each other up. I think we've got so polarized with political things, even during this COVID pandemic mm-hmm. thing, that even yeah. that became polarized. I was like, what are you doing? This is about humanity. And I think mm-hmm. we started to realize just how in need people are. Like, you know, meals going to seniors was so important during the pandemic. Getting food to people in disaster zones. This last year, we traveled to 21 states. I don't know how many parks we've been at because literally it was a safe place for us as travelers to be. We had to really, you know, talk about living in a mask for a year.
Yeah.
And in your car a lot of times. No, really, not, mm-hmm. you know, not as home. I mean, we are homeless, I suppose, if you look at it that way. But, you know, going to different communities, we live in the communities as we travel, and you see things change. There's so many issues in regards to climate change. And people are migrating according to climate change and poverty. And, of course, there's, you know, immigration and all of that's happening. But if we don't take care of each other as humanity, as one big humanity community and our environment, we're up a creek. We're up a creek. We should just mm-hmm. toss politics aside and look at the real issues. Just toss the whole political thing and just shove it.
We need to
all
space aliens.
It's just shoving
you. We need to space aliens. If they come down, everybody will band together around the world to protect Earth.
Mm-hmm.
We need that outside change.
It's funny. What we're talking about is really what the song Fond Farewell is really about.
I was going to bring that up.
It's not about being up in the space station and, you know, mm-hmm. one guy got left behind by mistake and everybody's moving on. It's about saying farewell to kindness and decency.
Mm-hmm.
And I say it this way. When I was little, I wouldn't say shit in front of my parents. I wouldn't say that word. I wouldn't say damn to my parents. Damn.
You're
you know,
not supposed
what
to hell.
I wouldn't say that. Damn.
Damn.
I won't say the F word in your show because, you know, we won't do that. But I could say the F word as if it's, hey, it's like saying,
uh-huh.
hey, you. Hey, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see the news, a school shooting, and a week later we don't know about it. Now we have Colorado, a week later we'll know about
gosh.
It. It's so easy to get past things that we don't, we're saying farewell to kindness and caring. And
mm-hmm.
if we don't change this in 10 years, the way we are acting, on especially social media, will be the norm.
Mm.
You know, it just,
it
because
is.
That's what goes. Whatever is the ugly thing, it gets used, and then 10, 15 years later, it's not the ugly thing anymore. That's not the way it should be.
Well, I think
you
have to travel more.
To.
Yeah. People have done a lot. I mean, COVID, everyone was boxed in, right, the majority. But as we traveled in this, you know, we're meeting people, we're at bed and breakfast, or we're house-sitting or pet-sitting. So we're actually living in a society, you know, which is this really cool thing. It's different than having a vacation rental. You're actually responsible. And when stuff happens, you
mm-hmm.
do go to the hardware store. You know, like you are now living there. So, and we really like it because it's a whole new thing. You're shoveling the snow. You're, you
mm-hmm.
know, hey, this is going to happen when a hurricane comes. And we've been through them, you know, on this journey of what we're doing. But it's about connecting. And we're connecting with people on a very intimate level. Socially distanced, everyone. I don't want to have the emails. I've been very careful.
Yeah, please.
But intimate level of we do break bread and sat across from each other. There's an amazing documentary called The Reunited States, and it's off of a book. And that is the book is a fantastic. I encourage people to watch it. Bridging the divide of political groups. But this is so important that we actually connect and talk. I think music is a huge part of it. You know, and this is where social media may have a good thing. We can go in groups and connect. On groups, on social media, and like music groups and things like that. But music is truly, I believe, that one solace that we can all go to. Music, movies, art, books. But music is a connective experience. It's connective. And
the universal
music,
language.
It is. It's connective.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Energetically, even if you don't know what the words are about, you can feel it.
Yeah. That's right.
Know what the beat says. Mm-hmm. So we need more music out there, like Project, what you're doing with December People. I think it's amazing what you're doing with that. That's super cool. Getting back to the album, though,
You've got this out now, so this was you can get all three, right? Everyone can go and buy all three right now. They're all up there on
the
board.
The first one is not available now. I'm thinking about repressing that once this is kind of run its course for the rest of the year. I might do a box set because I have video from our tour and stuff in 1988, and I might just put a DVD together and then have all the albums together with it. Just as like a little set, be kind of cool, you know. I don't do any of this to make money. This is all about the music for me, and it's very expensive to do it, so I have to pace myself. Right now, I'm working on the vinyl for an impression. Well, the record company won't do the vinyl, so I want to do it. I said, look, this is the kind of music that people like to hold that album. They want to read the notes and stuff. It's not just digital online stuff.
This is listening.
When I have a vinyl. Yeah, they said, do the vinyl. If you want to do it, you do it yourself. I said, okay, I will.
Right?
Oh,
wow.
So
but that's who you are. That's what, you know, just going in your history is so fascinating to me as a young kid going out there and deciding, well, I'm going to get my I'm still going to do my studies and balance a band and learn recording. When one label, folded, with your band, Hush, you decided, well, screw that. I'm going to go learn how to do it myself. I really admire that you had the lemons,
I had an odd built-in survival thing. I knew that I had to do something in music, so I majored in music in college. I was a vocal major. I'd sing opera and all kinds of stuff. But I never wanted to be a teacher.
Voice.
I'm a terrible teacher, though, because I like to just teach people what they want to know. I don't want to teach them the basics, And
I think that's a good thing.
I'm in the studio here, and I have a client I took a break from. I'm just going to invite him in so he doesn't stand outside here.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Randy, if you want to come in while I'm finishing this up, then come on in. You'll stand up there. He's being very respectful.
Hi, Randy. Hi, Randy.
He can't hear you on the headphones, but he's saying, hi, Randy. His name is Randy Remo, and we're going to finish his album Between Today and Tomorrow. And
What's he got? What kind of music?
His music, Randy, what would you say your music is? I mean, it's all over the map a little bit in a pop kind of rock, right? It's
contemporary adult.
Contemporary adult rock, but it's rock.
Contemporary adult?
He's not an adult himself, but, he's not, his music is.
I like it.
I have fun down here. I got to tell you, I get to work with people like Tempest, like Randy, all the time.
That's amazing.
They're super talented, and what's nice when they come in, they're bringing their child, their new baby, right? We're going to birth a baby. And when it's done, there's not a bigger reward. I mean, and then, of course, we do a good job. I put my heart and soul in everything. So he wants to go out and play it and sell the music and get people to listen to it. And it's a great, great thing having a recording studio when you know how to use it.
But you learn from a kid. I mean, that's what's cool. That you kept following it.
Yeah.
Do you think you got that seed to do this?
Don't you think he could come on our show when he's ready?
Oh, yeah. Bring Randy on.
Cool.
Randy will definitely come on the show and talk about it. Randy also does things for charity and disabled children. He owns a baseball team back where he lives.
You're
Pismo Beach, Randy? Pismo area?
Hey, I want to go to Pismo
Orchids.
Beach.
Well, he's close to Pismo Beach. Orchid. He lives in Orchid. He has a place in Pismo Beach too. Not a beach house, but close to the beach.
We're going
to
be in the Sequoias.
Right?
I know we're recording this, everyone, but it's going to be airing while we're in California Sequoia Country. We're going to California. Going home.
Huh?
We're both California girls, and we're going home for a little bit. We're going to be in the Sequoias,
Come on.
Which isn't far from Pismo. It's a couple hours.
Coming home
for
some sun, huh? I'm going to get a tan.
Yeah. And big trees, sunshine, wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to Madison, Wisconsin. Then we go back and go to Oregon. So I'm just saying, Randy, get it on. Get that out. Get going. When we get out to California. But, this is – I love what you've done in life in that it is positive and moving forward. You toured as a young adult touring with a band, then decided, this label closes, so I'm going to do my own. I love that. And then you ended up in England. Tell us how you met Charles and Keith. I think people
In 1986, I was sitting right here in the control room where I'm at now, which looked a little different, didn't have quite the same equipment, but it was still a commercial recording studio. The phone rang, and I answered it. And this guy in a high voice says, "Hello, this is Carl Palmer. Is Robert Berry there?" And I'm thinking it's a friend of mine.
Hello.
And I said, "Yeah, who's this?" He goes, "Carl Palmer." I said, "Oh, hi, Carl. What can I do for you?" Like, you know, because I thought it was this Richard Cassis, this drummer friend of mine. And he goes, "Well, I'm sitting here in John Klodner's office at Geffen Records." And then I went, whoa.
Because
John Klodner was the guy with Geffen. We got Aerosmith, Cher, everybody in the 80s.
Yeah, Geffen is
badass.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, it was fantastic. And I was like, gulp, okay, what could I do for you, Carl? He said, "I like your cassette tape. And I'm interested either in, we've got some trouble with John Wetton in Asia. Are you going to put a new singer in Asia, or I'm going to start a new band?" And I said, "Wow, Asia's my favorite band at the time. And Heat of the Moment and Only Time Will Tell. I love those songs."
Wow,
so,
yeah.
I met his manager. At a GTR show, which was Steve Howe and Steve Hackett's band from Yes and Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought me over to England, and Carl and I tried to start a band. We couldn't find the right people. So I actually joined GTR when Steve Hackett left. I replaced him and worked with Steve Howe for a year over there.
Wow.
And it's something strange about me that if things don't make me feel comfortable, if I can't do my best work, I just don't, I mean, it doesn't stay within my inner circle, put it that way. I'm not a quitter. I don't have an ego. It's just if people want to work with me as a team member and I can do my best work, I'm really happy. Well, the singer in GTR didn't want me singing anything, and he made my life miserable because I was writing on music with Steve Howe. So Steve wasn't, you know, sort of taking care of the situation, so I quit. That was my only big break I ever had. I quit. I said, you know what? I'm not going to live the rest of my life like this. I want to be happy. I have to turn this into a positive, and the way to turn it into a positive is to leave. So the manager was very unhappy with me. And the next day he calls, he said, "Keith Emerson called me, wants to have lunch with you. He heard your cassette tape." Carl had evidently played it for him because he found out I quit GTR, right? So from there, it just blossomed into a great friendship and a great musical partnership. And, you know, it was a stroke of luck.
You know, can you explain what a cassette tape is to people?
Pizza.
Our audience knows music. No, but we have a storage unit. It's 9x5 storage. We got rid of everything. And by the way, everything we owned went to the homeless. So just so you know, we're all in the same boat here. But,
wow.
It's all Nancy's slides of Africa and living in Africa. So like old school slides, not digital. And, and, my cassette called the cassette. My vinyl collection is gone.
Very cool.
I know.
Yeah.
My vinyl's gone because I gave it away. But the vinyl.
I have to say,
excited.
You must travel with a printing press because you have to have money. So you must print your own money.
No, we have wonderful supporters.
But it's not a bad idea.
And, we could do that, except for people don't have money anymore. It's all plastic and digitized.
We would make
now,
it look
so
better.
I know.
Bitcoin.
Okay, so I want to play. And I know you're going to have to get back in the studio, but before you go, we're going
to
close with Never. But I do want to ask Bond. We'll close with Never. But Bond of Union, is that the one for your mom?
Yeah, I lost my mom in 2019, and. The funny part for me was I always wanted to be my dad. You know, my dad had a big band with the horns and everything, jazz, and natural kind of music. My mom was the singer in his band. So my mom was a singer, but my dad had a band. He liked cars. I liked cars. My dad liked property. I liked property. And my dad opened a music store when he stopped traveling with his band and had organs and pianos. Then he got Vox amplifiers when I was little, which is what the Beatles used. So I have a recording studio, which is basically a music store, like my dad. I have a little property. I have a fancy car. That I have a Tesla Roadster. You know, I always wanted to be my dad. It was my mom made me who I was. You know, my mom, when I was young. I had 8 years of classical piano, and I hated piano lessons. She got the teacher to teach me Boogie Woogie because I liked that. So she saw that. And then when the guys had, they were 18-year-old high school guys, came into my dad's music store when I was 12 and tried to get me to play in their band because they thought they'd get free equipment. My mom saw that I had to sing a little bit, so she got me singing lessons with the guy at the college here that was the president of the department, which later year-wise, when I went to college, was fantastic. I knew him really well. And she always facilitated my dreams, kind of, never pushed me into something, but was always right there to, oh, I see he likes that. Let's make that happen. And I didn't get to sing it for her. We didn't have a big funeral. I lost my dad years ago, and there just wasn't a lot of people to bring to a funeral. So I thought, you know, I'm going to write this song and put on this album as the ultimate tribute to her. And so that's what it's about. But I also, like the song I wrote that I did with Rachel for Keith, I tried to write them.
Oh, Rachel Flowers.
Everybody
can,
yeah. I wrote this song about my mom, but it was more about the sacrifice that all parents make. If you had a good parent or a bad parent, they still made you who you are, and they sacrificed something somewhere for their kids. And that's what this song represents, you know, when you look back and you go, wow, you know, hey, your dad could be a falling down drunk. You're not one because of it. You know, and there's something positive in it. And my mom was just great to me. And my dad, of course, influenced me as a musician. And that's what
I did. Amazing. That's amazing because I think with his musicality of that kind of big band situation, you understand multiple instruments. In prog rock, you have so much going on. And to be able to have a melody that comes through it, it's like a symphony. It's like, you know, look at Frank Zappa, what he did as an I mean, he, to me, was a conductor. He was this awesome orchestrator, conductor, crazy, amazing human being. And crazy.
Yeah.
But I think that's what prog rock is. Like, and when you put it all together, I don't know. I don't even want to label it prog. I hate labeling. It's just great music.
Right.
You know, that just
it's
moves
me. It's symphonic rock. You know, it's symphonic. And it just
symphonic.
Sounds
like that.
A lot of movements, a lot of
sound.
I like
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. So, everyone, Fond Farewell and Bond of Union, we've talked a lot about. So go watch the videos. But you're going to just go get the album, okay? It's Third Impression, 3.2. Go get it. You can go to robertberry.com for everything. And we're going to close with Never. And this is a song that you both wrote together? Or did Keith write it? Then you added...
You know, we would back, I'll show you real quick here. I have a piano in front of my Pro Tools. I'm in my studio. All the recording equipment is here. But right in front of the big screen and what I can see out the window is this piano. And when I want singers, you know, you're singing this G, you're a little flat, so I'll talk to them. I'll say, oh, you know, you should have this chord. Or, well, Keith had a digital piano in his bedroom. And just like we are, we'd be on the phone. After we got the original concept all together, what we're going to do. And we'd jam on the phone. I'd play, you know, chopsticks, and he'd play, you know, something really fancy. And I go, okay. And I try to figure it out, his part. He tried to figure out my part. And we made up the musical parts of it, but it was up to me, as it was on the very first album even, to write sort of the verse and the choruses, those parts with the singing and the hook and all that. But we wrote that song, most of it, it was only 50% done when he died. So I had to fill in a lot of pieces on it. But the Emerson parts are super strong. You can hear it in the tune.
So
I mean, we wrote it all together, but I had to finish it up.
It's awesome that you've done that. I'm glad it's out there. It's out there now, everyone. Just go to robertberry.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And by the way, I want to say The Devil of Liverpool is one of my favorites. On the album.
That's the next video. In about a week or two, maybe, it will be a video. Right now, the video guy is struggling with it because it's a lyric video, and there's a lot of music in it. So there's not a lot of lyrics. It's mostly a lot of music. So how do you do a lyric video? So he has to really come up with some images and stuff. And I
love your videos. I love your videos. I'm going to start, subscribing and keep watching everything. It's been a real pleasure. Please keep us posted and keep us, we want, you know, as whoever's coming out of your studio, keep us posted. We want to hear what's going on. And we, And yeah. Tempest, too. Dude, we got to get, I mean, that was years ago. I swear they were on our show once. But I know we watched
Well, you should talk to Lee. Yeah, I should get Lee to give you a call. You know what? Are you opposed to someone having this number I called just to contact you? Let me see. I'm not going to say the number here, but
no,
I have
but that's
another
our radio
number.
Show number. Yeah, you're on our radio show number. You have the other one.
Cell phone.
Yeah, my backup cell phone. That's my puppy.
That's the one.
That's my puppy.
If Lee wants to talk to you, can I give him that number?
You can give anybody
can
my number.
Else?
Yeah, so tell them that you sent, that they need to say Robert sent you. Hey, Lisa, I'm sitting right here. I know. No,
yeah,
just say. So, yeah, you can use that. But listen, I want to give a shout-out to the National Parks Arts Foundation for sponsoring today's show. They are awesome. If you're a musician, artist, writer, poet, painter, potter, go apply to stay in a national park for a full month to create like Kauai Volcanoes, Chaco Canyon, Tortugas, your own private island. You and Sammy Hagar should go and do that.
That'd be so cool.
You're both beach people. You have to have two people that stay on an island, island. They take you out on a boat for a full month. He could bring all the tequila on the boat. You bring the food.
I can't drink. I'm not that much of a drinker. I think a little bit, but my God, Sam's like over the top.
He has to have his tequila. And then you guys create on an island and you can watch sea turtles. It's really cool. I'm just saying. That's my number Arts Foundation.
Last time I played Hawaii, I remember seeing a turtle. In fact, I was with Ambrosia, and it was mid-90s when I played there. Wow, that's a time.
I know you were the Ambrosia, and you were the front man for that. How did that feel? Like standing in for that and then like going in and like, I'm going to do that.
Oh my God.
Ambrosia.
I would have stayed in that band if I could have got them to do a new album, but I couldn't get them to do an album. It was an incredible experience. What a great band that is.
Cool.
And you know, I was singing the part of me. That's one of my favorite songs. So.
Well, yeah.
All that. Oh, love that.
Well, you know, when you think about taking over, like, for frontman, like, I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head, so my apologies, but the guy that stood in for Freddie Mercury,
Adam Lambert.
And he's a great musician, but cojones to do that. I mean,
he did a great job. I don't think anybody else could have done it. He did a fantastic job. My God.
Yeah, he really, really did, man. That's amazing.
He did more already.
They were symphonic too. Okay, we're gonna play Never. You gotta get back in the studio and keep us posted and all that good stuff. You stay well and take care and keep doing. You're an inspiration.
Alrighty.
Thank
you.
And we did too. Take care, everybody. Here it is, everyone. Never. Then keep up with us at BigBlendRadio.com. Here it is. Go to RobertBerry.com too.
Not a word so mean at the scene, so stressed.